Ah, splendid stuff. Okay, you're listening to Southside Broadcasting on Channel 1 for Patient Line and Hospedia. And it's time now on a Friday for us to actually welcome that awesome almanac of matters to do with nutrition, pharmacies, and so on and so forth, and in association with PharmaNor Nutritional Supplements Limited. We're delighted to welcome the awesome, as I said before, Dennis Gore. How are you, Dennis?
Top of the milk.
Excellent. So, I mean, we've dealt with sugar being the new nicotine. We continue working through that. I'm almost kind of, I feel in so many ways as though the whole country resounding to the notion of, two a day max, look out for 100 calorie snack. It could almost, we could have written that between us, really, that sort of person. But anyway, yes. Over to you for today's mini lecture.
It's very funny. I've been in my pharmacy here in Manchester 53 years. In fact, my mother wheeled me into this pharmacy 77 years ago as a baby. 76 years ago. No, 70. As a baby. It's actually my birthday on February the 6th, which is zooming up, and I'll be 77. And I've been in my pharmacy nearly 53 years. And I got into talking and helping people with their health, besides just being as a pharmacist, handing out prescriptions and giving advice on coughs and colds. But I got into nutrition and nutritional supplements. And in the end, I built up a collection of health products. We must have 200 different health products from all over the world. The main range of health food products that we sell, the main range is this, the word you just mentioned, PharmaNord. It's a Danish company, and I was impressed with Denmark because the law of the land is that health food products have to be made to pharmaceutical standards. And as far as I know, that's the only country in the whole of Europe where they have that regulation that health food products have to be made as good as the medicines that I hand out on prescription. So I was very impressed. And over the 25 years that I've been doing radio and TV broadcasts in Liverpool and Oldham and Manchester, and I've lectured in the end for PharmaNord in 26 cities, and PharmaNord have sent me to every world conference on a substance called Q10 that you mentioned earlier that gives you energy. They've actually sent me every 2 years for 20 years to Boston, Germany, Italy, London, Los Angeles, Prague, Belgium, Sweden, Seville in Spain, Bologna in Italy, and this July, all being well, it's New York. I've actually heard 1,000 lectures on Q10 over the last 20 years. So yes, PharmaNord, they've got about 48 different products, and they are amazing products for what they do and for the fact that they help, that they're made to pharmaceutical standards. So when I'm reading newspapers, things every day, I read newspapers and things crop up more and more when I think, such and such PharmaNord product could help people with that problem. So today is Friday the 2nd of February 2018. The Daily Express has a headline, massive headline, 2 inches high, snoring raises dementia risk. We're told 850,000 people in Great Britain. That's nearly 1 million people, and there's 65 million on the island called Great Britain. So that's 1 in 65 people have dementia. And it says here that heavy snorers are up to 3 times more likely to develop dementia. scientists have warned yesterday. This is Professor Elizabeth Coulson of the Queensland Brain Institute in Australia. So this is a professor from a brain institute in Australia. She said, treating sleep apnea may reduce dementia risk. So what's sleep apnea? Apnea, well, the prefix A, the letter A, means without, and apnea is to do with breathing. So treating sleep apnea, it's when people stop breathing. They stop breathing sometimes for a few seconds. And of course, if you stop breathing for too long, a person can die. And it's often found in overweight people that they seem to have this problem of stopping breathing. So it's another, and for stopping breathing for several seconds. And partners who are sleeping with a partner who sleep apnea, they can actually hear them stopping breathing many times through the night. And of course they snore as the air comes back in. It says people who suffer from sleep apnea are 2 to 3 times more likely to develop Alzheimer's disease. This could be because hypoxia, that means low levels of oxygen in the blood from poor breathing, causes nerve cell death. Now, in sleep apnea, it says the muscles and the soft tissue in the throat relax, blocking the airways. So the actual muscles, which when you're standing up, obviously are in a different position to when you're lying flat. And that's why people have this terrible problem of stopping breathing, because the muscles and surrounding soft tissue in the throat relax. Now this interferes with breathing, often stopping it. Turn to page 2. Stopping breathing altogether for short periods, many times a night. Twice as common in men as in women. And it can begin at any time, including childhood. Many sufferers are unaware they have it. The symptoms are often noticed first by a partner. That's what I was saying before. As well as heavy snoring, they include noisy and labored breathing and repeated short periods of gasping or snorting. The link with dementia means treatment of the condition is more urgent than previously thought. Dr. David Reynolds, the Chief Scientific Officer at Alzheimer's Research UK, said, previous studies have shown a link between obstructive sleep apnea and changes in the brain associated with Alzheimer's disease. But it's been difficult to tease apart the cause and effect from this research. It is not yet known whether treatments for sleep apnea could help reduce the risk of Alzheimer's. But ultimately, clinical trials are the best way to determine whether this approach could have a positive effect. This study, which will investigate whether a common treatment for sleep apnea may protect against cognitive decline, could be an important first step in gaining a better understanding of this treatment's impact on the brain. He also added, studies such as this one rely on people who generously volunteer to take part in research. Although this research is taking place in Australia, there are many UK studies in need of volunteers, both with and without dementia. And anyone interested in taking part in research can register their interest at www.joindementiaresearch.nihr.ac.uk. That's www.joindementiaresearch.nihr.ac.uk. In the Australian study, Professor Coulson and her colleagues are examining people aged 55 to 75 with sleep apnea to see if wearing masks stops or slows down the brain degeneration. Treatment consists of a plastic mask that fits over the nose and mouth and is connected to a machine that blows air under low pressure continually into the back of the throat. Professor Coulson said that this keeps the airways open, helping to maintain correct oxygen levels and allowing for better quality sleep. The response is immediate and obvious after only a few hours. Professor Pankaj Sah, director of the Queensland Brain Institute in Australia, said the research could lead to patients being treated much earlier. Sleep disturbances can occur up to 10 years prior to Alzheimer's disease, he said. And considering that Alzheimer is affecting roughly one-third of the elderly population, this important research may inform preventive public health measures in the future. And the last little paragraph. Dr. Claire Walton, research manager at Alzheimer's Society, said, "For years, researchers have been studying potential links between poor quality sleep and damage to the brain. However, a definite link between sleep apnea and dementia has not yet been established." Well, I think from reading this, it is very important to try and avoid, obviously, this sleep apnea, this stopping breathing many times in the night while you're supposed to be asleep, or you are asleep. And it is often linked to being overweight. And there is a big problem in the Western world of people being overweight. There was another article here, and this was in the Mail the other day. A big headline: obesity crisis means stroke victims are getting younger. It says strokes are hitting people earlier as unhealthy lifestyles and obesity raise the risk of an attack of having a stroke, an official report reveals. They used to be considered, this is strokes, they used to be considered a hazard of old age, but later statistics show the middle age, those 40 to 69, this age group, 40 years old to 69 years old, make up 38% of stroke victims in England. This is up from 33%, which was only 10 years ago. From 2007 to 2016, the average age of a stroke patient fell from 71 to 68 for men and from 75 to 73 for women. Public Health England today launches a major TV advertising campaign targeting the middle age and focusing on information about the warning signs. Any delay in the critical first few hours after a stroke can be devastatingly, vastly dramatically increasing the chance of the victim being left permanently disabled or even dying. I think there's a four-hour window, I'm adding this, when you've got to get into hospital if you think you're having a stroke, where your face has dropped and you can't speak. Experts believe older people are more likely to be rushed to hospital because people recognise their symptoms. But this does not happen with the middle age because people assume they are too young to have a stroke. One in six people in England will have a stroke in their lifetime. One in six. It is the third most common cause of premature death and the leading cause of disability. Roughly 57,000 people have a stroke each year, with 32,000 dying. Of those who survive, 65% leave hospital with a disability, and 25% of survivors have a second stroke within 5 years. A stroke occurs when a blood clot blocks an artery, or there is a major bleed in the head, reducing blood flow to the brain. High blood pressure, cholesterol and body weight are the main causes, all causing problems which are on the rise amongst the middle age. Juliet Bouveri, chief executive of the Stroke Association, said these figures show that strokes can no longer be seen exclusively a disease of older people. We start to see a difference in the rates of strokes between men and women from as young as 40. So, listeners, it's very important to bear in mind this word FAST, F-A-S-T. Do things fast, do things quickly. When we use four letters, F-A-S-T, you know that word you learned at school, an acronym. It means a word which is made up of four other words, and in this case it's teaching us that we have to look out for a drooping face, the person having a stroke because of the nerve damage from the brain damage, their face drops on one side, their mouth goes skew-whiff, and their arms can't move because part of the brain that would enable them to move their arms, that's been compromised by the blood clot, the stroke, or it could be a hemorrhagic stroke where a blood vessel's burst. And then the third one is a slurred speech. So F of the word FAST means a drooping face, and A, F-A-S-T, A means their arms can't move, and S is the slurred speech, like this. If they start talking like this, they've got slurred speech. And the T is Telenews watching this. It's the time to call 999. Public Health Minister, Steve Brine said, the message of this campaign remains as relevant as ever. The faster you act, the greater the chance of a good recovery. That's why I'm urging everybody, and we must remember stroke at any age, to familiarize yourself with the signs of a stroke and be ready to act. So remember, listeners, FAST, that word acronym you learned at school, telling you a word is made up to give you a message. In this case, it's the word FAST. If we're talking about, you think somebody's having a stroke, phone 999. The F is for the face, if it's drooping. The A, F-A-S-T, the A is arms that cannot move. The S is slurred speech, like this. And the T is you do something now. Now is the time, phone 999. So I think somebody's having a stroke. The face has dropped, they can't raise their arms, the speech is slurred. And T, I'm phoning you now. So one of the things for sleep apnea is being overweight. And one of the things for having a stroke is obesity. This headline was, obesity crisis means stroke victims are getting younger. And another problem of being overweight is diabetes. This is where, if you're type 1 diabetic, it's actually an autoimmune disease where your own immune system affects the pancreas where you make insulin. Insulin is a hormone that you make to control your sugar levels. And if your pancreas, where insulin is made, is damaged, as in an autoimmune disease, then you will be on insulin for life, injections of insulin from could be a very early age, can be a young child, 2 or 3 years old. But majority of diabetics are what we call type 2. That's where it's often brought on by being overweight. Because if you are overweight, the fatness that you've created in your body, you're usually made of muscle, and you have some fat, but if you become fatter and fatter and fatter, then the fat damages even the pancreas, and then the pancreatic cells where you make your insulin can't make the insulin. And then the receptors where in your 100 trillion cells, 100 trillion listeners, not 100 million, not 100 billion. You're made of 100 trillion cells. And if the receptors on the cell wall aren't capable of receiving the sugar, which you need some sugar for energy, because if the receptors get damaged, often by being overweight, by being fat, or worse than fat, is being obese, or worse than being obese is being very obese, then if the receptors don't work, even insulin trying to bring the sugar to enter the cell to give you energy, the receptors don't work. So there's two things in type 2 diabetes. It's being overweight, and then the receptors not working. At the moment, we're told one person in 20 is type 2 diabetic. And within 10 years, it'll be one in 12 will be diabetic. From the present number of diabetics, which I think is 4 million, it'll be going to something like 5 million. You'll walk down the street, it'll be, it's a football match, and every 12th person will be type 2 diabetic. And being overweight has a lot to do with it. And having strokes has a lot to do with it. So in the Pharmanord range of products, you have a substance called BioGlucoControl. It's a capsule made from a berry from the mountains of Chile. And this berry stops the substance called glucosidase from breaking down starch and turning it into sugar. So there's a brilliant discovery that people in Chile have known for centuries. You can stay healthy by eating this berry. And now the extract of the berry is in a capsule called BioGlucoControl, helping to control your glucose levels, which damage your body. Because the big problem with diabetes is that sugar can damage the eyes. One of the leading causes of blindness is in diabetes, because the sugar can damage the eyes. And heart damage, 1 in 4 diabetics have heart problems, and 20% of diabetics can even die younger than they should be dying at a normal age, because the sugar can damage the kidneys. And then amputated legs, when the sugar damages the nerves and the blood supply to the legs, if the nerves can't tell the arteries and veins to open and close as they're supposed to open and close, then unfortunately the blood supply stops and people can get gangrene and amputation. And in Great Britain, 160 people a week have a leg, foot, toes amputated because of poor blood supply to their extremities. Remember, the heart at the top part of your body has to pump blood a long way down to your toes and your feet and your legs. That's the furthestmost part of your body. And if the blood supply is not very good, then you can get gangrene. So bioglucocontrol with this purple berry is helping to stop starch break down to sugar. And the only other ingredient in the capsule is the mineral chromium. We used to have chromium-plated bumpers in cars years ago. Now bumpers are made of plastic or rubber. But that mineral chromium, you need a hundred millionths of a gram, and that's shared with your 100 trillion cells. So each cell isn't getting much. But the chromium in this bioglucocontrol is enough to let the door open, the receptor open, the right amount of sugar now enters the cell, and then your body will tell the brain, I feel full, because you'll make the hormone leptin, which tells you, I feel full. And so this product, bioglucocontrol capsules, you take one with your breakfast and one with your evening meal, it enables you to handle sugar much, much better, and greatly reduces even people who are pre-diabetic. One in five listeners, we're told, one in five people, so that's one in five listeners. And think of yourself, are you fat? Are you overweight? You could well be one of these one in five, and you're not aware of it. You could be pre-diabetic. And in my pharmacy, I've had many people now who are pre-diabetic, and they've taken this natural product, this bioglucocontrol, containing the berry from the mountains of Chile and a hundred millionths of a gram of this mineral chromium that car bumpers used to be made of. And within a month or two, they are no longer pre-diabetic. I've even had people, type 2 diabetics. At the moment, we're not selling it to type 1 diabetics. But I've had people who are on metformin and glycoside. These are some of the names of some of the medicines that are used for diabetes, who've had very good improvements in their sugar control. One obese lady, when she pricked her finger, was getting number 11, and it should be between 4 and 7. Within a month, taking bioglucocontrol, in addition to her metformin, it dropped right back from 11 to 7.7.
And Dennis, at that point, we have to move on because we're actually going to be speaking to two fine folk in a few moments to talk about the condition of bloating, which also connects together. We've got Dr. Anthony Hobson, who's a consultant clinical scientist, and indeed TV presenter Lisa Snowden. So, as ever, an awesome connection with your good self. That's been truly wonderful. Are you back again with us next week?
Try and stop me.
Hurrah!
Strokes affect 130,000 people in England and Wales each year. Here's a recipe that can dramatically decrease your chances of strokes.
Excellent. I better get a pen.
167 grams of calcium, 245 grams of magnesium,
1 tablespoon.
Remember, any more than 1 tablespoon could kill you. Any less than 1 tablespoon could kill you.
Right, what was
the recipe? That's the recipe.
Oh,
if
damn.
You would like a more simple solution, you can always call Pharma Nord on 01670 519989.
All right.
Or visit the website pharmanord.co.uk.
Let me see if I can jot that down. What was the number again?
01670 519989. Or visit the website pharmanord.co.uk.
And how do you spell Pharma Nord, I wonder?
pharmanord.co.uk.
It's almost as if I'm having a conversation with the radio.
Don't be silly, that's impossible.
Pharma Nord, winning the war of nutrition.
You're listening to a Southside Broadcasting podcast. Southside Broadcasting is a media company which aims to provide a wide range of features from the rural, health and lifestyle worlds. You can regularly listen to entertaining podcasts with interviews and correspondents from Los Angeles, Nashville, New York and London. You can take part in our Book of the Month features, grab some great nutritional advice, enjoy broadcasts from the Great Yorkshire Show, the Lincolnshire Show, and enjoy local football reviews with our regular feature, Fly Me to the Moon. You can even hear a BAFTA award-winning director drive a train full of teddy bears.
Quite right, too. It's Siren FM at Southside Broadcasting. We're delighted now to actually focus on, well, a fascinating issue with two extraordinarily wonderful folk. The fascinating issue is basically tied up with what I used to refer to as the tummy test, but it's actually bloating in all sorts of ways. It seems that 70% of us suffer from bloating at some point, but we don't know why. And the two fantastic individuals we're delighted to speak to talk about this is the awesome presenter extraordinaire, Renaissance woman in many ways, Lisa Snowden. How are you, Lisa?
Hi, very good. Thank you. That's lovely of you to say.
Always true. And the equally wonderful Dr. Anthony Hobson, consultant clinical scientist. How are you, sir?
Very well, thank you.
Excellent. You're also clinical director of the Functional Gut Clinic. Lisa, if we can come to your good self. Now, generally, you are the spirit of perfection in so many ways. And yet, you say that obviously when it comes to bloating, you've had the challenge. You've had those difficulties. So share with us the sort of scenarios that's affected yourself.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, over the years, just I've definitely suffered with bloating. I think, a lot of us probably won't admit it, but, you know, I certainly love talking about things and health, and I think knowledge is power, and so over the years I've had lots of bloating and lots of kind of IBS issues, and certain foods have kind of triggered that, as it were, and so I became interested in taking a probiotic to really help and ease those symptoms, and I've been taking Proven probiotics for about nearly 3 months now, and it's completely helped me in so many ways, helping to boost my immune system. It's helped sort of like calm everything down. I have much less bloating. And so it's just kind of it's just become part of my sort of wellness and my everyday life.
Anthony, I will recall back in the 20th century talking to journalist colleagues who were suffering from irritable bowel syndrome and a whole range of things, and it seemed to be emerging then as a kind of almost a response to stress, and clearly we have too much stress in our life and so on, but there's a balance right there. Is this a new thing? Is this something that's always been with us, or is it something to do with those deadly things, processed foods?
Well, stress can come in two directions. It can either come from the bowel itself or from the brain. So if you're stressed, then it sends signals down to the bowel to change it, so the way it contracts and secretes and makes it all upset. But likewise, if you're putting things into the bowel that it doesn't like, then the bowel gets stressed and that sends messages back up. So it's a bi-directional approach, and I think if we can reduce stress in both our lifestyles and also to improve our diets, then, you know, we get a double whammy effect.
That's fair to say, Lisa, that obviously doing the fantastic stuff you do in TV presentation, etc., it can be just a tad stressful. I know it's not necessarily brain surgery, but it is a case of light goes on, you're sort of... do you find that you have to manage your lifestyle more to be aware in terms of what sort of things you can eat, what things you can't eat, and so on?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, going back to the whole stressful lifestyle, you're absolutely right. Live TV, learning scripts, it's, you know, like you say, the light goes on and you're live to millions of people. It is really stressful. Add to that foods that didn't agree with me, it was just like, you know, a disaster waiting to happen. I'd have, like, stress going on and I'd be, like, drinking too much coffee and too much milk, and it was just kind of a combination of everything. So I did have to take a kind of step back, manage my stress, and also be more aware about what I'm eating and how certain foods make me feel as well after I've eaten them, bloating and all that sort of stuff.
And is there something, Anthony, that we can look to? Because clearly I think most of us, when we reach a certain stage in our life journey, we kind of know that, well, if you want to actually get, I don't know, spots, you definitely go for that particular brand. If you want to actually sort of have a rash, you go for that. You know, we have food allergies that are certainly around. Is it a similar thing with the alveoli and microvilli and all our wonderful friendly bacteria that work inside of us?
I think everyone knows which foods upset them. And you can avoid them or reduce them or occasionally eat them and then just put up with what I call the bowel hangover rather than the brain hangover that you might get with alcohol. I think the worry that I have is that more and more people are avoiding more and more things. And the thing that keeps the gut healthy is to have a diverse diet. lots of different things from different food groups, but do that in moderation. And then occasionally, you know, understand that it's natural to be a bit bloated after you've had, say, you know, beans and pulses and high-fiber foods, and not worry about it too much. But if those things persist, know when to, you know, either change your diet or escalate upwards and go and see your GP.
Indeed. But again, I think you've addressed the whole notion of managing diet, being aware of that particular aspect that we work through. Again, returning to yourself, Lisa, I mean, presumably this is something which, you know, it's not so much a condition as such, but it's something you're aware of. And knowledge is power, as we've already said. So clearly, the more you're actually aware of this, and of course, with the work of using good bacteria and so on, it's not necessarily a complete, it's a disaster, it's all over, my career is finished time.
No, absolutely not. You know, it's just fascinating to kind of find out more about how the gut works. And like speaking to Dr. Anthony, you know, like upsetting the bowel upsets the brain and vice versa. It's just absolutely fascinating. And just by making a few changes here and there, by increasing my exercise to lower my stress, by just sort of like trying to be more mindful, meditation, just all of that has just really helped. And then, you know, if there's certain foods that I'm going to eat, like the bowel hangover, which I love, because there's certain things you'd be like, you know what, my stomach's not going to like me in a few hours for this, but it tastes delicious, so I'm going to go for it, life's too short. I take my Proven probiotics, and it just eases those symptoms a little bit more, and it just keeps that gut, my gut, more healthy in a happy environment.
One of the favourite words I had back in the day when I was reading biology at university was borborygmi, which I think is the name that we give to the sound that our gut makes as it squeezes its stuff through the esophagus. Anthony, without necessarily going into esophageal sort of scenarios and such like, ultimately, is the good thing, as Lisa's just described, about using probiotics and so on, it can actually help that balance going, and balance is essential to our good health and digestion.
Certainly, and just to go back to borborygmi, there is actually a device now that measures bowel sounds in patients, so they've taken that.
I think it's a new series waiting to be happening, I mean, I really do.
I love it.
Biologists never waste anything, but we always kind of regurgitate it. So, but, you know, if you imagine that there are certain types of bacteria that can ferment things 10 times more aggressively than others, if you can replace those with a probiotic which can actually more gently ferment food, so you still get the natural goodness and fermentation that helps the bowel keep healthy, but it doesn't get overdone, then, you know, that would be beneficial. Now, what we see quite often is that patients have bad bacteria in the colon, and if you give them the same test meal as a healthy subject, the amount of fermentation they get is super excessive, and that results in loose bowel motions and bloating and noises. And then introducing either dietary changes or a probiotic can bring that back into balance. So, yeah, we've got to listen to our bowel quite literally.
Exactly, and as we often say, be good to your inner workings and they'll be continually good to your good self. Lisa, where's the best place to go to for further information, even if people want to find out what they talk about? Borborygmi, what's that all about then?
Well, for the all probiotic advice, go to provinprobiotics.co.uk. And then for the other little gurgly bits and pieces, do you want to do the...
I love that, little gurgly bits and pieces. Just spot on. Genius.
I would always recommend going to the IBS Network website, which is a fantastic resource for anyone with any digestive issues. And yeah, that would be great to go to as well.
Fantastic. I've got two final questions for you, our kind of customer satisfaction things. First of all, Lisa Snowden, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme this morning?
A wonderful, wonderful one. Yes, thank you.
This is good. And Dr. Hobson, has it been okay for your good self?
Yep, perfect.
Excellent. Well, hopefully we can connect with you again in the not-too-distant future. I still think that series is a goer, though, Lisa. You might want to suggest it.
I think after this, after we finish this conversation, Dr. Anthony and I will be discussing.
Yeah,
thank you for the ideas.
Many thanks. Take care now.